The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The U.S. claimed that a couple of Russian jets have downed one of their $32 million drones. The Russians denied any involvement. But earlier today, the Americans released video footage of this. It's taken a while because they have to strip it of all of the sensitive information. There's normally loads of overlays on there. But it's pretty clear what's happened from that video footage. There were two passes by the Russian aircraft. The first one, they're jumping fuel. And then the second aircraft might have been the same aircraft or its wingman, has another go at attacking it. This time gets much, much closer to the drone, actually impacts the propeller.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, there's still a lot of talk about that. You know, I was catching some news commentary on it this morning. Yesterday, I had the great privilege of talking to Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood about the Russian jets and how they interfered with our U.S., you know, Reaper drone there over the Black Sea. There's a scramble right now to get to that drone. We have no warships, of course, in the Black Sea. Russia does. And that interference caused they actually released video footage of this. I don't know if you've seen it or not. Actually, pretty cool stuff. There's a camera on this drone. It shows the rear of the drone. And then all of a sudden, you see these Russian fighter jets harassing it, right? Dakota Wood, Lieutenant Colonel Wood, said the other day, you know, they were doing this for about 30 minutes. It's just a drone, right? There's not even a pilot in it. But I guess there's cameras. They dumped gas. You could see the fuel being dumped all over this. Had no real effect. But then he got too close. He tapped it. And there's a shot of the propeller untouched. And then they show you after it got hit. And you can clearly see that propeller midair got bent. It sent the drone down into the Black Sea. Now, the Defense Department officials are saying the Russians, are already there trying to extract our drone. They're denying it. The Russians are saying, hey, we had nothing to do with this. If drone was flying without transponders, and, you know, this is evidence that, you know, they're involved in this war. Pentagon released video saying, hey, hang on. Russian jets did fly past it, and they did interfere. But, you know, everybody's walking it back. Nobody's saying, hey, it's an act of war. There's even been dialogue, well, is this a sloppy flying? You know, I don't think so. You don't fly, you know, a multi-million dollar jet, unless you are a pretty competent pilot. So I hear that. I know we're trying to talk this down. Our Defense Department says we do not want war with Russia. These things do happen. Analysts say that, you know, it shows a jet impacting the drone. And then, of course, you know, the Russia, as I said, says, Pentagon released the video. You heard that audio clip there. We'll see what comes of this. You know, Russia claims they can get at our drone. The U.S. says that it's going to be complicated and that sensitive information we have probably has already been eradicated. The drone crashed into about 4,000 or 5,000 feet of water. And a mile is what, 5,200 feet? Is that 52 something in a mile, right? So you're talking about almost a mile deep of water. Anyway, we'll continue to follow this story as tensions in Ukraine continue and as that war persists. Been well over a year. In fact, I was thinking about this morning, you know, as I was praying my rosary I was to our Blessed Mother. I was thinking about the troubles in the world and how she often comes prior to times of great trial for the human race. How God in his mercy sends her. She is our spiritual mother. At Calvary, he publicly proclaimed her our spiritual mother. He gave her to John, and, you know, John, he entrusted his mother. And I thought about the consecration that took place. We are about a week away from that, you know? I mean, on March 25th, a little bit over, about March, in the week and a half, or whatever, it was March 25th. Maggie, what year was it? Was it last year or was it the year before that the consecration took place? Pope Francis, when he consecrated the world. I think it was last year. I'm afraid to say that because time for me is a blur. It could be 2 years. I'm positive. It had to be last year. I remember being in the studio. Father Rocky and I anchored the live broadcast of Pope Francis consecrating the world and by name Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. That was 2022. Maggie is confirming it. Thank you, Maggie. March 25th. We're coming up on that anniversary. A lot of people say, well, what happened? They said the same thing about the consecration John Paul II did, right? We saw, you know, the spread of Russia and its errors and You know, clearly the consecration worked. John Paul II, within 5 years of his consecration, the Iron Curtain fell. What's the time frame for the fruit of this consecration? You know, on Monday of next week, Dr. Mark Miravalli is going to be stopping by the studio. I'll ask him about that. I would love to get his take on it. He's a noted Mariologist, one of the foremost experts in the country, and has closely followed these consecrations. But, you know, I don't get despondent as these things happen internationally, because I really think God's grace is at work. We just have to continue to pray more, respond to the call of heaven, to pray, to do penance, right? That was one of the things in the time of Fatima. You even see in Lourdes, you know, the harsh penances that Catherine's Bernadette Subaru did. All the great saints understood that. So what can you do to make a difference? Pray, fast, give alms, do penance. Those things have a profound impact. So we'll see how it all plays out. I've been monitoring this. I'd love to see God's plan unfold. Hey, there is a federal district judge in Texas. He heard arguments yesterday over the FDA illegally allowing the abortion drug mifepristone to be approved back in 2000. And this is something somebody put on my radar. They called during the chapel to Divine Mercy. And I thought, oh, man, I'm so grateful for you calling in to pray for that, because we need to continue to pray for that even more. Well, he had a hearing yesterday. Numerous medical groups, including the Catholic Medical Association, they sued the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, saying, look, you didn't study the safety of this drug regimen. You know, did you look at all those chemicals that are used? You ignored evidence that these chemical abortions cause even more complications than surgical ones. That, to me, was an eye-opener. I never would have thought that in a million years. So that's what they're claiming. The FDA, of course, counters. They said, hey, we did all the proper studies. Everything's going just fine. No problem with the drugs. So the judge, a Trump appointee named Matthew Kaczmarek, said that he would take the case under advisement and issue a ruling as soon as he's able. Of course, he's not under a lot of pressure, because this case could have been, you know. Well, I guess let me rephrase that. I was going to say he's not under a lot of pressure. You know, he is under a lot of pressure. I was going to say he can make his decision, because it's going to go up the chain anyway. I think it's going to go to the Supreme Court. But I do think what he does here is critical, and I take that back. I think he's under tremendous pressure from both sides, because this case could have a profound impact on abortion, greater impact, really, than the Dobbs decision from last year. And I just think that is that's just a huge, huge decision. So please pray for him. And I'll say that really very passionately. Pray, 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 pray that this man's heart is convicted and his mind is open to truth, that he makes the right decision, that any, you know, nefarious force will somehow be thwarted. That is a huge case. You wonder, okay, Roe has fallen. What's next? This is what's next, okay? This is how the battle's going to be played out. We'll win the war in the end, but we also have to win these small battles. And this is a pretty big one. Hey, the fallout from that toxic trail derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, continues as the Attorney General has filed a federal lawsuit against Norfolk Southern. And according to NBC News, the state claims in a 53-count complaint that the company violated hazardous waste and water quality laws and was negligent for causing the train derailment and toxic chemical releases. I was kind of stunned. Okay, you have a derailment. But then you look at the weeks that followed, and there were several others, right? I'm like, what is up with this? I never heard of so many train derailments. So what's coming out from this particular derailment? How many train derailments there are in a single year? 2019, we went back and we looked at the numbers. I was stunned. This will probably surprise. Let me give you a guess, okay? Let me see how good you are at guessing how many train derailments are there. In 2019, were there 30? That might be high, right? Were there 3? Or were there 300? Or were there more? So you got 330, 300 or more. Okay, Maggie, so open your mic. You want to play? Let's play. Were there 3 trail derailments in 2019? Were there 30? Were there 300? Or were there more than 300?
I'm going to say 30. 30. Yeah, I would probably guess that too if they were underreported. I think that's a pretty good guess, right? I think, well, I don't hear many of them. Maybe there's only three of them. 300 would be off the charts.
Yeah.
1,600 trail derailments.
Wait, I'm sorry, what?
1,600 trail derailments.
Are you kidding
me? In 2019. How many of those do you hear? You might hear about one or two. Last year, the number went down. Last year, it was only 1,350. That's stats that we looked into. And I'm thinking, gosh, I never heard of this. Now, I saw a news report. In the state of Illinois, people are complaining because they have to sit at these train crossings forever. And maybe in your state, you're doing the same thing. Simply because the trains are getting longer. One train was about 2 miles long. How long does it take for a 2-mile train to pass you, right? Hope you don't have an emergency and you got to get to the dock, right? It's kind of crazy. Obviously, those derailments, you know, they're not caused, you know, not causing toxic spills like the one that happened in Ohio. At least I hope they're not. But the people of East Palestine and all the surrounding areas are now impacted the rest of their lives by the spill. Property values, of course, have plummeted. Who wants to buy a home or a piece of land in East Palestine right now? Not me. No one's really trusting what the government's telling them about the safety of the water or the air that they breathe. And some people are just, well, they're moving out and they're actually abandoning their homes. They're just saying, yeah, maybe they're underwater in the mortgage. Maybe they just like, hey, what the heck? They've left. There is a correspondent in this country who I really appreciate her reporting. She actually travels around the country to different cities and puts her finger on the pulse of what's happening because she talks to the locals. She talks to the people there, not just government officials, which she does, but to the people. Her name's Selena Zito. She's a reporter, a columnist for the Washington Examiner, and also a columnist for the New York Post and a CNN contributor and author of a book called The Great Revolt. I don't know if she's a CNN contributor anymore. I'll have to verify that. I think last time she told me she wasn't. But she interviewed every president and vice president in the 21st century. So as I said, she has covered the highest echelons of government to the man on the street. And you can find more about her at selenazito.com. That's her website. But I invited her to join us today just to give us an honest look at what she's seeing happening right now and give you an update because there's not been a lot of follow-up coverage on this recently. Selena, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. I actually knew there were almost 1,400 train derailments last year.
Wow.
The bulk of them, there's not a toxic spill. I haven't been a contributor to CNN for several years.
I knew that. I'll have to tell my producer, Tom, about that because I remember you telling me that last time, but I do appreciate you. I see you pop up on is it Fox? I've seen you on recently too. Do you pop up there? Where was it? Yeah, I've seen you.
Yeah,
I compliment you on your kitchen last time. My wife was watching with me one night. We're serving the channels. I'm like, hey, that's Selena. She's on my radio program all the time. And it's like, yeah, this really cool kitchen. My wife said, oh, I would like her. She says, she thought you were kind of cool.
I have been out in East Palestine. Darlington, East Palestine is a town that is right on the state border. Actually, my great grandparents come from that town.
Oh, really?
It's not just East Palestine, although East Palestine has suffered the brunt of this toxic burn. I should tell people there's two different things that happened. There was the derailment. Mm-hmm. And then three on February 3rd, and then on February 6th, there was a controlled burn that was advised by the railroad to the governors of both Ohio and Pennsylvania to do, because they said, if you don't do this, there is going to be a catastrophic explosion, which would send shrapnel for miles. Wow. However, the governors have now rethinking taking that advisement because we don't have all of the data back. That's still going to take weeks. I know that sounds shocking, but the impact from the soil, in the soil, in the air, in the water, under clothes. I happened to be on the day they did the toxic burn. I happened to be 57 miles away as the crow flies in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, on a hike.
Know where it is?
And I saw it, and I thought that somebody bombed Pittsburgh.
Wow.
That's how massive this cloud was.
Wow.
And it just moved slowly all over these people's homes and their cars and their clothing and their soil and in their water. And I have been going there almost every day for over a month, reporting out what's going on there. And it's an utter failure of this company in how they have handled it.
Really, I mean, you see the president of Norfolk Southern come on the air all the time, and he seems like, hey, we're all in. They put up $20 million, and they're going to be here to the end. We're here for the people. Is that all smoke that he's blowing, or you think that you know, that's just a show for now? I don't know what to believe. I mean, that's just what I'm seeing from the on-air appearances that I'm able to glean.
Well, this is how much I believe him. He was testifying before Congress last week, and J.D. Vance, senator from Ohio, asked him about taking the toxic waste to East Liverpool and having it burn out at a incinerator there. I was there when they shipped it and put it in the incinerator and fired up the incinerator. And he said, oh, no, that's not happening. So that's how much I believe him on anything else he said. If I could have left through my car and through my television at that moment, I would have.
Yeah, I know that you've crossed the border, the state border. You talk to people in Pennsylvania. I mean, what are you hearing from the people themselves? I mean, are state officials paying attention to the issue? I would think they are. But what are the people saying? What are local officials saying? Is this going to now become a memory in the public eye? You know how news works, right? I mean, it was all news a week or two ago, but now you're not seeing a whole lot of, broadcast reporting on this.
I would encourage people to go see the work that I've done. I've been reporting about it in the Washington Examiner and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, but also the Free Post.
Yep.
And the minute that Joe Biden said, yeah, I'm not going there, the major news networks just packed up and left.
Yeah, I know.
There's no pressure for him to show up. It is astounding to me that a man whose greatest gift has always been this sense of empathy, right? Whatever you thought of Joe Biden when he talked about the loss of a child, you saw, and he talked to someone who lost a child, or had suffered great loss. You saw this sense of empathy. In all honesty, that's not something that former President Trump did possess. However, former President Trump did possess the understanding that you need to show up. And for whatever reason, President Biden and has decided not to show up in East Palestine, and it gives the optic that I don't care about middle America. I don't care about working class whites. And that's how it comes off.
What do you think the truth is? Is that really what he believes?
I wouldn't pretend to get inside Joe Biden's head. Wouldn't want to. But, your job as a leader, I talked to Governor Christie about this yesterday for an interview I'm doing that'll be running on Sunday, I think.
Cool.
But anyways, he said, look, one of the things I learned about when Sandy happened was, and it happened the day I showed up, which was the day after Sandy, had left the coast.
Yeah.
And I showed up in this town in, I think it was called Bessemer, New Jersey. And this woman came in running up to me, and my state police were kind of like freaked out. They didn't know what she was going to do, but I told them to let her come, and she came and she just hugged him and thanked him for showing up.
Wow.
And to Christie's point, you have to show up when you're a leader.
Amen.
You have to. And that Biden has made this decision is incredibly curious.
Yeah, it's, to me, it's just bad politics. I guess he might feel that he was forced to go there because I know a lot of conservative media were saying, hey, how come he's not there? And maybe he didn't want to capitulate and feel like his arm was twisted to go there and just stay away from it. I don't think Mayor or Secretary Buttigieg did a very good job there either. You know, there's this great...
No, he didn't. He didn't do a good job. Honestly, I didn't care if he came.
Right.
But however, the president should have come. Yeah, presidents go to these things all the time. Yeah. It literally is a 22-minute ride from the White House to Western Pennsylvania / Eastern Ohio.
Yeah. You could take it a chopper and been there in a heartbeat. Hey, yeah. I'm curious also, just as I saw this report, and I've often thought, okay, you've got, I did a show yesterday on these forever chemicals getting into waters and the problems it's causing with everything from cancer to fertility and all sorts of stuff, right? So I'm thinking, okay, now you've got these toxic chemicals that were burned in the air. Many are concerned it's going to seep into the groundwater there. And I can understand people saying, you know, I'm not going to take the chance. You know, my life is too valuable. I'm leaving. And I've heard that people are boarding up their houses and leaving the area. How true is that? I mean, how many people are leaving? I couldn't imagine just getting up and walking away. I mean, how do you restart? Do you have the money to put down another home? I mean, how do you do that? Do you leave your job, your family, your friends? I mean, that's a tough gig. What's going on with the people?
Yeah, I mean, people are just leaving. You know, well, here's the thing about East Palestine. East Palestine has always been this quaint little village that never sort of fell apart like places like Youngstown, Ohio did, or Allentown, Pennsylvania, right? There was never that decay because of their proximity to suburban Pittsburgh and the city itself. They were able to live this rural life in this little town that almost looks like it's something out of Hallmark, but still be able to be, you know, have a career that, you know, was a 25-minute drive away. Yeah. And so I think that almost makes it even more heartbreaking that people are just, I mean, they're thinking about their kids. They're thinking about the grandparents. They're thinking about lives, you know. There may not be a health thing that comes out of this for 1 year, 5 years, or 10 years. Then all of a sudden you see these peculiar cancers showing up. And everyone is sort of forgotten about what happened, and they're sort of forgotten.
You know, the thing I know has people outside of East Palestine concerned is the watershed. And I don't know if you've spoken to any government officials or not. Will they be tracking these chemicals further down the watershed, checking the Ohio River, eventually the Mississippi for them? Is it that serious?
Yeah, yeah, they're absolutely doing that. Both DeWine and Shapiro have been diligent on that. I cannot say enough good about both of those governors. This is a case in point when it's very, very smart to elect good managers and not ideologues, and neither man has ever been either, has ever been sort of these ideologues, and I think that strength has shown in how they've handled this.
Yeah. You know, Selena, I almost didn't cover the story today. I was having a conversation about it with my producing team, and I was thinking, is this now too local of a story? It was national. We saw the gravity of it. It raised awareness regarding Northern Southern and, you know, our train system, how we handle these issues, et cetera. But is it a story that is now past? Should we move on to something else? How do you respond to that? Is this still a very national story, or is it you see it now as a local issue that will be played out on the local scene?
Look out your window when you're driving home. Look out your window in your neighborhood. Within 5 miles of everyone that lives in this country, there is a train track. This affects everybody. This has just happened to happen in East Palestine. This can happen anywhere.
Yeah,
That's why everyone should care about this, because this could be you next. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your reporting. I look forward to our next conversation, too. People can read all your writings, right? Simply by going to selenazito.com.
That's right. Thank you. Right. They can sign up for emails. They're free, fun, and not fattening.
I love it. All right, free and non-fattening. Those are two good things. Selena Zito.com. Selena, that's S-A-L-E-N-A, last name Z-I-T-O.com. Go sign up for them. Sign up for emails, get plugged in, be in the know, all right? A short pause, and I'll be back with more. Stay with me. Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states. Well, tomorrow, of course, is Friday, the third week of Lent. That means we should be abstaining from meat, right? Right? Well, tomorrow's also the Feast of St. Patrick's, right? I love him. One of my favorite saints. For many descendants or wannabe descendants of the old Emerald Isle, it feels like a solemnity or maybe more like a day of great celebration, right? Rather than a day of penance. So, of course, the secular world sees it as an opportunity for partying. Because the Irish have that reputation of, you know, having a lot of fun, right? So how well-deserved is that reputation? That's another question. But, you know, one of the big things that has come out of all this is like, you know, I want my corned beef. I want to have my beer. I want to celebrate tomorrow, a lot of people are saying, right? St. Patrick's Day. Does this go with the character of St. Patrick? This is a man who, you know, climbed the Rocky Mountain. He fasted for 40 days and for 40 nights. Probably very sober, too. he prayed for the people to convert. I've always marveled at 40 days on that mountain, praying and fasting for the conversion of the people. And we know what happened. What a great evangelist he was. He brought a pagan culture to Christ. And it's kind of like those memes about, you know, St. Valentine's, who suffered greatly for the faith, and we celebrate by sending heart-shaped cards and chocolates, you know? I don't have a problem with it. I don't want to be a downer here. I'm trying to lay this out in a way just to make you think. We are in Lent. It is a time of penance. There are some bishops who are not giving dispensation for not eating and not partying like that. It still is a penitential day. But there's a lot of others who said, no, you know, it is a special day. You know, when March the 17th falls on a Friday, unfortunately, bishops have got to confront the question, what do I do with my flock? Am I going to grant a dispensation from the Lenten discipline of abstaining from meat or not? So the National Catholic Register did a survey. They found that 70% of U.S. bishops have granted that general dispensation to the faith of their diocese. Most of them, you know, asking the faithful, look, if you're going to do this, then please offer some other act of penance. Abstain from meat on another day, or pray a rosary, or give, you know, a generous gift of alms, or they give you these other possible solutions, attend Mass. The other 30% said, no, we still got to observe abstinence from meat that day. Though there were some added caveats to it as well. So let's talk about it. What does the church teach? Why? Where do you fall in it? Love to hear from you as well. I'm invited today, J.D. Flynn. He's co-founder and editor-in-chief of The Pillar. I don't know if you've checked this publication out yet or not. You can go to pillarcatholic.com. It really is a great resource. These guys, I was just talking to J.D. off the air before we came back out of the break. And I said, man, I can't believe the traction you guys are getting. It's pretty amazing. They're breaking some huge stories, and people are talking. You know, one of the largest followings of any Catholic publication in the country. I think they're number one. J.D. joins me. He's also a canon lawyer, so he'll be able to answer your question as well. So, J.D., good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew, and in the spirit of the segment, top of the morning to you.
Top of the morning to you. Do you have some Irish in you? With a name like Flynn?
I do, and my dad taught me when I was a kid that if you have Irish genes, then they're stronger than all the other genes, so they're the only ones that count.
I love it.
So in our family, those are the only ones we're allowed to count.
I love it. You know, it's so weird about this holiday. It's a fun day. You know, my very first national radio broadcast ever was on the Feast of St. Patrick,
And I bombed miserably. I shouldn't even be in talk radio today because of how bad I was. I mean, it was a train wreck. And only by the grace of God was I able to have another opportunity. And it was all providence. And here I sit. So I've always turned to St. Patrick, who was a great communicator, great evangelist. And I love his day. You know, I love him very much.
Yeah.
The day, though, you know, a lot of people celebrate. We lose kind of the Catholic meaning of the holiday. Bishops are always faced with this challenge. What do I do? Do I allow my flock this day to, and do I grant dispensation from observing what's considered a universal norm, not eating meat on Friday in Lent, or don't I? Unpack this for us, if you would. I know 70% of the bishops said yes, 30% said no. What's the rationale? And as faithful listening, you know, what do you want to communicate to them?
Yeah, so as you say, so if you are a Catholic and you are 14 or older, then you are obliged in the United States to fast from or to abstain from meat on the Fridays of Lent. That's not true in every part of the world, because each bishop's conference gets to make its own rules on this. And for example, in Canada, the rules on abstaining from meat are much less restrictive than they are in the United States. But here in the United States, if you're a Catholic and you're over 14, all things being equal, you're obliged to abstain from meat on the Fridays of Lent. Every so often, every 7 years or so, St. Patrick's Day falls on a Friday, and so bishops kind of face this question of what they'll do, because, of course, the Catholic story in America is an immigrant story, and a big part of the Catholic story in America is the story of Irish immigrants who were part of the building the church in great waves of migration. And, of course, a lot of people still celebrate their Irish-American heritage and these kinds of things. And so, it looks like about 70% of bishops have offered some kind of dispensation. And you would know, you can – I know some places have published it. I think you mentioned the National Catholic Register has published kind of a list of this. And I think dioceses have made this available on their website if they've published a dispensation. But in many cases, bishops say yeah. We know that a lot of Catholic families want to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. We usually do that with corned beef and cabbage and things like that. And so if you're going to eat meat on St. Patrick's Day, you're dispensed from the obligation to abstain from meat. And many bishops would ask you to do a different penance, or some bishops have commuted the obligation, which means they say you have to abstain from meat on some other day if you're going to eat meat on this Friday. But again, we abstain from meat in the Fridays of Lent as a penance, because making this small act of sacrifice, especially the small act of sacrifice all together as a church where we're all doing the same thing, helps us to be not only in solidarity with one another, but in solidarity with Christ on the cross. And of course, the sacrifice of not eating meat is a pretty small sacrifice compared to the sacrifice of being on Calvary. We do this, you know, as part of our penance, to remember our sinfulness and to repent of it. And yet the bishops say there are times when celebrating the life of the church, the history of the church, the holiness of the church might merit a kind of a dispensation from that general practice.
So, you know, what advice should you give to the laity who are listening to the faithful? I mean, I guess you should know what your own diocese is doing. It's so often it's in your bulletin, or they make that announcement. If not, is there a resource to check out? What would you recommend?
Yeah, I found this very cool map. I think you mentioned it, that the National Catholic Register published. I kind of wish, you know, my news outlet, The Pillar, had done this before they did, because it's really great. But they made a map, a kind of interactive map where you can scroll over the whole country and see which dioceses have dispensed and which dioceses have imposed some obligations on that. So that's a good resource, or you could go to your diocesan website or probably your parish website even and find out. And then there's another kind of provision that's worth knowing, which is that if your diocese hasn't dispensed you from the obligation to abstain, but you really have some family plans to abstain to celebrate St. Patrick's, or you already have a corned beef going in the crock pot or something like that, pastors in the church's law have the authority to dispense people one by one as individuals from the obligation of abstinence. So, of course, if your diocese didn't dispense you, you could always go to your pastor and ask him what he thinks about that.
That's awesome. I did not know that. I learned something new today. It's fantastic. Yeah. I appreciate your spirit of non-competition. You know, so often, you know, I mean, here you are giving a nod to the National Catholic Register, and they do a great job. I love the work they do. I read their writings as well. You're at The Pillar, and I think that's fantastic too. Let's talk about your publication for a moment, if we can. I was just checking out your headline here: Francis, Germany, and the Schism card. What's going on with Germany? There's a lot going on all around the church. The French bishops, we could talk about that too. It's been reported that some are just quietly changing the church's teaching on homosexual actions. There's this move to bless same-sex unions. Let's start with Germany and your headline here. There's a lot going on in the church, a lot of division. Fill us in.
There is. And so in Germany over the past couple of years, maybe some of your listeners have been following this, there's been this series of meetings involving bishops and lay people. It's called the German Synodal Path or the German Synodal Way. And what it is basically the bishop said, look, we know that a lot of people aren't going to Mass anymore. We know a lot of people have been scandalized by the sex abuse scandals. We should have a meeting to sort of talk about how we could update or reform or renew the church, which actually sounds like a good idea. The problem is that in Germany, what that's meant is basically lots of proposals to change or reject Catholic doctrine and actually, sadly, bishops going along with it. So proposals to rethink the church's teaching on sexual morality, proposals to advocate for the ordination of women to the priesthood, proposals to advocate for effectively lay governance of the church. And for the most part, this very, very powerful body of lay people in Germany called the Central Committee of German Catholics, which is sort of a super German name, if you ask me, has been kind of setting the agenda. And the bishops, for the most part, with few exceptions, have been sort of voting in favor of their proposals. So that's put the church in Germany at odds with the Holy See. The Vatican keeps warning them to knock it off, and they don't. And recently as just today, in fact, German bishops have kind of acquiesced to the demands of this group and said that churches will start providing kind of blessings, liturgical blessings for gay marriages and other relationships that are outside the teachings of the church. And so the question is that an act of schism? Does the Pope have to respond? Will the Pope be willing to respond? Where does this profound division in the church go next?
You would think the Pope would have to respond. I mean, again, you're the canon lawyer here, but if you're doing something that's in diametric opposition to the teachings of the church and the catechism, you know, doesn't he have to intervene before this gets out of control?
You would think so, although I think there's a pretty good argument that it's been out of control for a couple of years.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And what the Holy See has done is send sort of letter after letter to the German bishops saying, knock it off, knock it off, knock it off. And the German bishops have said more or less, oh, thanks, we'll take that under consideration. Right. And so the Pope, you know, has demonstrated with Germany, you know, he has told them time and again that he doesn't agree with what they're doing. I think for a lot of people, the question is, okay, but when does authority have to go from expressing disagreement to expressing some kind of consequence? And, you know, all of us have to ask that if we're parents, when is it time to step in and say to my kids, okay, you've really stepped out of line and this is what the consequence is going to be. And I think a lot of people have expressed being scandalized by the fact that hasn't happened yet. And it's a time, I honestly think, a call to pray for the unity of the church and to pray for the Pope to have, you know, I mean, heavy, of course, is the head that wears the papal mitre. Yeah. And so I think there's a call for all of us to pray for the Pope that he has the courage and the fortitude to do the very difficult thing of trying to preserve unity in a church that's really splitting in Europe in all kinds of factions, especially over questions about sexual morality.
It's really crazy. I know the Germans have been at this for a long time. I was surprised, and maybe I just have not been in the know on this, when bishops in France, you know, are trying to quietly change their teaching, what the church teaches about the practice of homosexuality. And I know they're hoping to pressure the Vatican to change it outright. And of course, you got Germany, which you just talked about. Are other countries on board with this as well? And what's up with France?
Yeah, Belgium actually is the place where a lot of this has really manifested in addition to Germany. And then some of the French-speaking bishops of Belgium have suggested policies to the bishops of France, which has sort of carried this through. But, you know, what's happened effectively is that European bishops across, I think, continental Europe, especially Western Europe, are looking at the profound secularization of their countries, looking at unbelievably dwindling mass participation rates and baptism rates, and asking themselves, well, what do we do? And, you know, unfortunately, I think that the answer that a lot of them have come to is, well, we can't teach the things which people disagree with. We have to sort of meet people where they are, or we have to acquiesce to the culture, even if that means watering down or in some cases just rejecting what the church teaches, especially about sexual morality. Yeah. And, you know, that has led to bishops' conferences in a number of countries, calling for the church to reject or revise her teaching on sexual morality. Luxembourg, bishops in Switzerland, bishops in France, again, Belgium has been a leader of this.
Wow.
And it's born of the fact that these incredibly quickly secularizing cultures have effectively eschewed their Christian roots, which Benedict was talking about, you know, 30 years ago. And bishops are in a kind of panic. And some of them, I think, have focused on evangelization. Well, if the culture is secularizing, that means people are looking for meaning more than ever before. Let's find new ways to articulate the gospel of Jesus Christ. But some of them, I think, have the idea that If we affirm the way that people are living, they'll think the church is relevant again. And you know, so I think probably a lot of your listeners would say that path is a perilous one.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, look, keep writing. Keep up your good work. I hope people will check you out. I'll give a quick plug. The website's simple. It's pillarcatholic.com. Pillarcatholic.com. And check out The Pillar. I know I get your emails, but there's tons of stuff here that people could check out. Lots of posts and explainers and interviews and analysis of what's unfolding. So if you want to be in the know, you may want to check out pillarcatholic.com. What do you have coming up? Are you working on a new story or what's
We are. You know, we're covering Drew right now. You know, there's this global consultation process, the Synod on Synodality, and of course, sort of the next phase of that is unfolding as the church is getting ready for a big meeting of bishops in October.
Yeah.
We're covering that. We're working on some stories related to how churches can better kind of manage their finances and help parishes better to manage their finances. That's, I think, becoming an important issue in the church in the United States. And then, of course, we're covering kind of trying to do what we can, of course, to cover the good news of the Eucharistic revival and the way that the church is trying to sort of encourage a greater Eucharistic devotion.
You got it. Well, J.D., we'll catch up soon. Have a happy St. Patrick's Day and a wonderful Feast of St. Joseph and all that's coming your way through the rest of this Lent, okay?
Likewise. Thanks so much, Drew.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. That's J.D. Flynn, one of those co-founders of The Pillar. You can check him out at thepillar.com. When we come back, you know, we could talk a little bit more. What are you doing, too? Maybe I'll ask you very quickly. I have to take a short pause. Are you going to abstain or not? There was a woman named Carol who just tweeted us. She says she thinks that's the least we can do is abstain from meat this Friday. And she says, I'm Irish. I'm over 59, but I'm going to abstain. It's the whole point of Lent. Now, I don't want to be more Catholic than the Pope or my bishop, right? But I do understand where she's coming from. I mean, I do think we still have to be focused on the penitential aspect of it. We come back, I'll give you a little more history on it. Stay with me.
Connecting you to the truths of your Catholic faith. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More information, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Somehow it doesn't mean very much unless you've got someone to share it with.
This is the Drew Mariani Show, the Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Yeah, we're about 9 minutes away. So if you want to join me, it's a powerful time of prayer. We gather together around the country and literally around the world, and we pray for one another. I don't think there's anything, anything more powerful, I think, is the Mass, right? Of course. But, I mean, when we get together and we pray like that, we implore God's mercy, we are seeing unbelievable graces flow, lots of answered prayers, and peace is one of the great, I think, byproducts of that. Because, you know, not every prayer is answered the way we want. We all die. Maybe that cancer diagnosis is your pathway home or that of your loved one. But so often when we pray, God gives us clarity of mind. He gives us peace of heart. You know, it's tough. He gives us the comfort in the midst of our grief. So let's pray for each other and really for submission to God's will. He wants us to carry those crosses a little bit longer than let's just ask for the grace to do that. Friday is a fast day, traditionally. You know, it always is. I mean, you have to sacrifice something on Fridays. But during Lent, we abstain from meat as Catholics, right? And meat on St. Patrick's Day, people are saying, well, my bishop might give me a dispensation. He may not. Do whatever your bishop tells you to do. If you want to do a little bit more and abstain, you can certainly do that. I learned something interesting the other day. I learned that St. Patrick died during Lent. I never knew that. Which year he died, they're not really sure. But one of the candidates, I think, is 461. But March 17th was a Friday when he died. I just think it's a day where we should take a chapter from him. You know, Friday is a day of abstinence for Catholics, especially during Lent. But, you know, again, I said don't be more holy or try to be more Catholic than the Pope. Three-quarters of the country's diocesan bishops have said, you know, you have a dispensation. So if you do get the dispensation, don't forget that you should still offer something else up. You know, the Catholic Church requires fasting on these days. It's normally one full meal and two smaller meals combining for less than a full meal. And in abstinence, not eating meat, you know, on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday, and of course the 6 days during Lent. But the question is, when March 19th falls on a Friday, it's the Feast of St. Joseph, right? This year we're going to celebrate it on Monday. Fasting is not required. So, you know, I know it gets confusing, all this Catholic, you can fast this day, you can't fast that day. Why Friday? Why not? Well, let me talk about Friday, then I'll tell you what Our Lady said, because I find this fascinating in terms of why you might want to do a little bit more. In the early church, some say the first century, Christians fasted and they abstained from certain foods on Friday because it was the day Jesus died, and that's the day we honor. So we've done so ever since, and it's a surprise that a lot of Catholics, but canon law still calls for abstinence. I don't know if you know that or not. From, you know, abstinence from meat or from some other food is determined by the conference to be observed on All Fridays. So if you eat meat, you're called to offer something else up. You're still called to unite your sacrifice to that of the Lord, right? Over the decades, things have certainly evolved and changed. But I think, you know, one of the great gifts that we have while we're making this journey towards our eternal home is the ability to suffer, is the ability to sacrifice, is the ability to pray, is the ability to do penance, right? We look at those things sometimes, if you're so entrenched in the world, as horrible things, but they're really quite powerful. In Fatima, one of the great themes of Our Lady was calling these kids to a life of sacrifice. Right, to a life of sacrifice. How much do you sacrifice? You know, do you do penance? Do you fast? What she said there in Fatima, I think, is really quite telling. Well, actually, the Angel of Peace first appeared to the children in the summer of 1916, before the Virgin actually appeared to these Fatima seers. And the angel said this to the kids. And these are kids, right? So what would the angel say to you if it appeared to you today? What are you doing? He said to the kids, pray. Pray very much. The holy hearts of Jesus and Mary have designs of mercy on you, he said to the kids. Offer prayers and sacrifices. Offer them constantly for the Most High. Not just a Friday, right? But offer sacrifices. Make everything you do, this angel said. It said, make of everything you can a sacrifice and offer it to God. Offered as an act of reparation for the conversion of sinners. Let me just stop on that point. That's a message for you, and it's a message for me. There are so many opportunities for you and I to sacrifice every day. Maybe let that person in line in traffic. Maybe pick up that, you know, that thing on the floor, that piece of trash you would normally walk by. Maybe offer a kind word to somebody. Maybe not have that second helping. Maybe not eat. Maybe sacrifice something else, right? The angel said, and these kids were little, 8 to 10, right? 9. Make of everything you can a sacrifice, offer to God as an act of reparation for the sins by which he's offended, and in supplication for the conversion of sinners. She says, you will then draw down peace upon your country. Is there a lack of peace in your home? I think this will draw down peace in your home. I think if we do this as a faithful community of believers here in America, it'll draw down peace upon our country. And if we do it, it will bring down peace upon the world. You know, this angel who came to the Fatima seers, it was interesting because he identified who he was. And I believe every country has an angel assigned to it. Why do I believe that? Because when the angel spoke, he said, I am the angel of Portugal. He identified himself as that. So Our Lady herself said the same thing. That was the angel. He came in 1916. The following year, the Virgin appears, right? What does she say to these kids? She says, pray, pray very much. Make sacrifices for sinners. For many souls go to hell because no one sacrifices themselves for them, and pray for them. So I just say to you now, I mean, as a final thought, and we can go on, there's so much that Our Lady said. Even that angel in the third secret of Fatima came with a flaming sword, and he was about to torch the earth. And what did he cry out in a loud voice? He cried out three times, penance, penance, penance. You know, it's not a punishment for us. This is a gift that we can offer to God. So as you approach, you know, Friday, celebrate St. Patrick's Day. I'm not a bummer. I'm going to celebrate. But be cognizant of the fact that you can still offer some sacrifice. You can make some act of penance, offer some form of reparation for those in your family that are away from God, for those in society who are rejecting him. maybe for your own sins. Let's pray when I return.